Hello! Welcome to Evanta.
I'm John Sands.
I'm Paul Carenza.
And this is a...
You're you. Whoever you are,
don't ask us. We can't see you. Yeah. Well, not often.
But just we'd like to mention you, because you're as important a person as we are in this. Slightly less.
No, that is true. No, that is very good. Frankly, well, if you weren't listening, we wouldn't bother doing it.
Think of this as a conversation between the three of us, where you say nothing but listen.
Yeah, you're like a silent party in the room.
You can talk to us if you want.
Bound and gagged in the corner, under duress.
We're talking at you. So, thank you for tuning in.
We're not going to buy. We're not going to bind and gag you, honestly.
We won't. We're nice people. We're just here to talk about films. And regularly, we normally talk about films that just come out and things we've seen on DVD and new releases. This is the second of two specials addressing... Well, two big films of the 80s. Two big years of the 80s.
Although we may well just progress into other films under other years as well.
Well, who knows, exactly.
Yes. But this started very early on in the podcast history.
Yes, there was a war between 1984 and 1987 as to which is the better year for films. So, previously on Movie Banter, we've addressed 1984 as a year and looked at some of the films therein.
Yes, which is your argument. That was your wrong argument.
I was arguing on the side of 84, and John reckons 87 is the better year
for
films.
Which is... It's something which struck me a while ago, but quite a long time ago, and it's forever burned into my head, as 87 being not necessarily saying that every film in 87 was brilliant, or lots of the films that we may talk about are the greatest films ever made, but for me, 87 is the sort of most definitive 80s year in my mind. There are so many films came out that year that scream 80s at me and are embedded in my childhood memories.
Well, we'll see if you're correct in about half an hour's time, probably.
I am.
Let's go then, shall we?
It's a four-minute podcast.
No need to even bother.
Far more angry than I meant you to be.
A little bit. Yeah,
anyway, in the meantime, I think I'm right, but everyone always thinks we'll try
and fill the podcast with something else. So in the meantime, let's begin with, fresh from the website I will now plug, themovietimeline.com. We normally do on this week in movie history, so in this year in movie history...
Oh,
1987. John will try and guess what film we're talking about as I give the event. 87 was the year that Jerry Lundegaard asks Carl Showalter and Gaia Grimsby. It's not easy to even say
you
this.
You haven't practiced this,
have you? to kidnap his wife, and they murder three people.
Fargo.
Correct. Well done. It's also the year that the events of A Nightmare on Elm Street 3 Dream Warriors take place.
Is that from A Nightmare on Elm Street 3 Dream Warriors?
Correct. Well done.
Why? Right.
It's also in July of 87 is when the events of Friday the 13th, A New Beginning, took place.
Right. You're making this quite easy, to be honest.
A little bit, actually, aren't I?
Yeah.
We'll make it more difficult for you. Okay. 87 was when Romy White and Michelle Weinberger graduated high school.
Romy and Michelle's high school reunion.
Yeah, still quite easy, actually, isn't it?
Not necessarily, because, Romy and Michelle... Yeah, you'd need to know about the film.
This one's quite easy as well. It's the year when Harry met Sally. again, for the second time, in a bookshop.
That's probably from when Harry met Sally.
Correct, well done. Okay, there must be some more difficult ones here. Okay, here we go. The man who will later be an annoying drunk in a pub who calls C.D. Bales Big Nose is crowned Denver Darts Champion in this year.
No, that's from Roxanne.
Correct, well done, very good.
I'm a sad freak like that.
Well, it could be Life of Brian. They calls him Big Nose as well, doesn't he?
But that's not C.D. Bales.
It's not 87 either.
Well,
is
very
it?
True.
Yeah. Okay, in August of 1987 was when Josh Baskin made a wish to become a grown-up at a carnival, and a mechanical wizard granted it to be so.
That'll be Big.
Correct. Well done.
I don't know. That was set in 87.
That is indeed.
When was Big made?
I think...
might be 88?
Yeah, about I think 88. Okay. I set the year before. Although, interestingly, another film which did a very similar thing, although much more recently... was actually on Tuesday the 26th of May 1987 was the date when Jenna Rink's 13th birthday party, she had her wish to be 30 years old granted.
13 going on 30.
Exactly, so same premise and also set in the same year. So there you go, nice to know. It's a big magical year for making people grow up. And lastly, Alyssa Jones gains the nickname Finger Cuffs after a menage a trois.
That'll be Chasing Amy.
Indeed, and we don't need to go into detail of why.
No, let's just watch the film and you'll work it out.
That way we can avoid the explicit rating. So, welcome to 1987. And would you like to start the ball rolling if it's your year with one of your selected films?
I will.
From 87.
I'm going to lead off with... I'm torn whether to start classy and then go into trash, or start trash and go classy. I may just start with top of the list, which is in no particular order, but Lethal Weapon.
Ah, yes.
But in terms of a classic 80s shoot-em-up film, it's set... It was the beginning of four films. There were rumours of a fifth, which I think have now been scotched completely. But it's the classic buddy cop pairing of Riggs and Myrtle.
Oh, indeed.
And, it's just... It's, in my mind, anyway, it's a much-loved, and should be much-loved, great comic, well, partly comic, partly serious, decent action, good characterization, family you care about, or Murto being the family man and Riggs being sort of the man on his own, suicidal.
Family and fun, then, clearly.
Well,
yeah.
No, but then sort of brought into this family, at least in part.
Yeah, true.
And apparently, the original ending of Lethal Weapon was them going their separate ways again. But then they realised the chemistry was so good, and frankly, they probably wanted to make a sequel.
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah.
So they worked it in, so he sort of invites him home, and he starts to get on with the family. And yeah, it works for me on every level.
Well, it set the tone, really, didn't it, for I think sort of future buddy cop movies like your Rush Hours and things like that.
I think so.
Because there wasn't much. I mean, there were other films before that, but none that quite got that comic tone, but also the comic.
It does strike a good balance of fun and serious. And also, it's one of the. I think it's toward probably the tail end of kind of Vietnam related films as well, because Riggs is a sort of Vietnam veteran and suffering because of that. And because of the years, because Vietnam finished in early 70s, I think, around then.
Maybe.
And I mean, off the top of my head, I can't think of that many films since Lethal Weapon set in whenever the present day was.
Yes.
That feature Vietnam veterans sort of struggling through it.
True, yeah.
So it's sort of towards the end of that era as well.
Because he did have similar sort of time. Is it Born on the 4th of July, Tom Cruise? Very different sort of film, of course. But again, that's about, you know, the Vietnam vets and recovering from that. So,
And also the near suicide film, the suicide at the beginning. The film starts with Mel Gibson putting a bullet in a gun and about to shoot himself, and then resists because he sees a photo of his recently dead wife, and partly that's why he wants to kill himself, but also reminds him, you know, she wouldn't want it, and he must fight through it. And it was that near suicide sequence that got him cast in, was it Hamlet?
Oh, okay, yes, he did, didn't he?
Yes.
Yeah.
So, yes, Lethal Weapon, a film which I love very much.
A fine start. I see your Lethal Weapon, and I raise you. Actually, I'm going to mention Roxanne, because we mentioned it already in the movie timeline thingy. It's probably one of my favourites of that year, because it's. I think I watched it again recently. It has slightly dated, I think, certainly in outfits and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
But it's just a really sweet film, and I sort of grew up seeing it a few times, and it's a romantic comedy, modern day revisiting of Cyrano de Bergerac.
Yes.
Which is actually a play I found the script of recently. I was always planning to put it on, you know, like student theatre or school or something like that. Never quite got around to it. But it's a great play, and I think it's one that can be reinvented pretty well, and it translates well to the screen. I think Roxanne does it very well.
Yes.
With Steve Martin as C.D. Bales, so Cyrano de Bales. you know, as this fireman with a very, very big nose. And this quite sweet story of him trying to woo Daryl Hannah. But at the same time, Daryl Hannah hasn't really noticed him. She's noticed the young, fit firefighter.
Yes.
Who, the young, fit firefighter does like Daryl Hannah, but can't put into words the way he feels about her. And C.D. Bells is the one who can actually write, but doesn't look brilliant. There is a slight sort of undercurrent, in both the play and the film, a slight undercurrent of, you know, why are we siding with Cyrano or C.D. Bales when actually this other guy really loves her as well, and actually, you know, it's not like this guy's a baddie or anything, but ultimately you have to come down one side.
Yeah, I always got a thing, he doesn't quite like her as much.
Yeah.
C.D. Bales, and also because you feel this guy is sort of, you know, like I say, a young fit fireman, he could have anyone.
He is very true.
Doesn't have to be Daryl Hannah. Whereas C.D. Bales, he likes Daryl Hannah, and she sort of likes
exactly.
him.
Exactly, yes, yeah. And I actually champion the film, if only really, for that scene we mentioned earlier where the drunk comes into a bar and is challenged to say as many different... He says big nose to C.D. Bales. And there's a lovely moment where C.D. Bales turns around, everyone goes, oh dear, because they know this bar, they know what he's like. And they're all looking at him going, what's going to happen now? And Steve Martin character just says, well, very calmly, you can do better than that, I'm sure. In fact, I will do better than that. I will give you 20 good put-downs based on my nose in different styles. And that's a bit taken directly from the play, and it's one of my favourite bits of the play, is when he again challenges this person to do that and in different styles, and he says, let's do it inspirationally, let's do it artistically, let's do it matter-of-factness, and different ways you can actually do put-downs. And certainly as a comedian,
it's quite handy.
It's a good scene to watch and go, actually, fair play to him. They've worked well on this. So I think it's a very, very sweet film, and I sort of, probably over a couple of years, put it on and do enjoy it. It creates that lovely warm feeling.
Oh, yes. So nothing too rom-commy, but the closest thing I've got is Princess Bride.
Hey, gotta love that.
That is a proper classic. I mean, while I'll freely acknowledge that a lot of the 87 films on this list are really just my own personal love of those films.
Yeah.
But The Princess Bride is pretty much universally acknowledged to be awesome.
Yeah.
And it's a fairy tale, because I've read the book as well, which is similar, but sort of, yeah, it's just humorously told fairy tale. With Carrie Elwes or Ewells.
That's right.
I can never, I can never pronounce his name properly. Who is woefully underused.
He's a good actor, isn't he? I like him. He's funny. He's
yeah, he's in brilliant in Hot Shots. Yeah. Brilliant in this. Brilliant in Saw.
He's in Saw as well, isn't he?
And he's right, yeah. He's in Liar Liar as well.
Robin Hood Men in Tights.
Oh yeah. Oh dear. So yeah, he's got range. Mm. But yes, and he's in this along with, can't remember her name, but Val Kilmer's now ex-wife.
Sean Penn, isn't it?
Not Sean Penn.
No, Sean Penn's ex-wife.
Oh, was
Robin
it?
Wright.
Oh, it? Robin Wright Penn. Yes, sorry. Yeah. Right. Yes, I was thinking of Joanne Wally Kilmer.
No, Val Kilmer was never married to Sean Penn.
That's what confused me. Yeah, and I thought Sean Penn isn't in this either. Anyway. Yeah, and it's a tale of a young sort of stable boy who falls in love with a princess. And the princess gets kidnapped, and he is apparently murdered by the dread pirate Roberts. But then she is pursued by someone, and it could be him, could be someone else. And also Christopher Guest on fine comic form.
He's very good. It's got a really good cast of characters and caricatures, isn't it?
Yes.
You've got that fellow who just goes inconceivable all the time.
Yes.
And then you've got, my name is Diego Montoya.
Oh, yeah, Mandy Patinkin.
Patinkin, that's right, yes. You killed my father, prepare to die. Wonderful.
Yes, and the classic sword fights between the two of them, saying, "Ah, well, I've been fighting with my left hand, but actually, I use my right hand."
Exactly.
Yes. Well, I have also been fighting with my left hand. And yeah,
it's just funny.
It's brilliantly ridiculous.
Dolman, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah,
he
was a genius writer.
Yeah.
And yeah, I know Stardust.
Yeah,
which
right.
came out
before,
recently. Yeah, that was compared to sort of a modern Princess Bride, which I think is fair.
Yeah.
It's that same funny. Funny but serious.
Yeah.
I mean, it can be serious when it needs to be, but it's not constantly silly, but it's generally silly.
But certainly, if you haven't seen Princess Bride, but you have seen Stardust and enjoyed it, I'd recommend Princess Bride.
Yeah, definitely find Princess Bride. You will love it.
Any film that has Columbo as the prologue and epilogue,
yes.
That's a winner.
And it's got Peter Cook as the speech impediment ridden vicar.
Marriage! The amount of times in planning this wedding where that's come up, we all seriously think of having a vicar who just goes, marriage.
Wonderful. And also has one of the best comedy turnaround and runaway moments.
Oh, that's
in
very good.
As well,
yes, yeah.
Where the bad guy is finally faced with the hero, and really, because he's normally surrounded by goons, and suddenly realises he's about to be faced with a one-on-one sword fight, and just legs it.
Yeah,
and it's all. Great,
but
great
fact that, you know, we talked about it for a few minutes there, and it's only now you get to those ones, which are classic moments, and you know, it goes to show it's got enough in it that it's just funny throughout and really good, a good romp.
Yeah, it's just nicely inventive.
Yeah, I'm going to mention I suppose it's also a romp. It's not quite as good, to be honest, but I've got a slight fondness for it, which is Spaceballs.
Yeah,
you're not so sure about Spaceballs.
Well, the trouble is, I have two memories of Spaceballs.
Yeah.
One was from probably early 90s, maybe, having seen it and remember, and then at university, sort of 1997 or 8, remembering that. And someone had the video and said, "Hey, let's watch Spaceballs." And I thought, "Oh, I remember that being brilliant. Let's watch it." We all watched it. We all thought it was rubbish.
Yeah, well, I deliberately haven't seen it since.
Right.
I saw it then, you know, 87 wasn't the last time I saw it, by all means, but probably early 90s was probably the last time I saw it.
Right.
And I quite like to keep it that way.
Yeah, I think I'd hang on to those memories.
The memory of it is better than it actually probably is. Which is probably telling of 87 as a year, you know, in that it has films which are defining of those years and of, you know, classic parts of youth. But actually now, probably best not necessarily revisit some of them.
That is probably true.
I think Princess Bride you could revisit.
Oh yeah, I mean
Spaceballs. I'm quite happy that at the time it did its job.
Yes, hang on to the memory. There are a couple of good gags in it. I remember like the stunt doubles being captured.
Oh yes,
instead of the heroes.
Good. Yeah, that's quite good.
Quite nice.
And also remember the alien doing a little dance across the bar. That's my abiding memory of it as well.
I remember I saw that before having ever seen Alien.
Yeah, likewise.
So I didn't
quite get it, but I enjoyed it anyway.
Yeah.
So
and there's also there's a gag about combing the desert. Which is that's an appalling joke.
Yeah.
But there's a line tied into that which is often quoted among people we know. But I won't repeat it again for fear of the explicit rating.
Oh, fair enough.
So yeah, I mean, Spaceballs. I can see it's definitive 80s.
Yeah.
87 film. But yeah,
I think also it sums up Mel Brooks' career at that time because it's, you know, Mel Brooks' film and it's Rick Moranis is in it, and again Rick Moranis a stalwart of the 80s, and where is he now? He's given up.
I think he's happily retired.
I think he
Yes, because they're working on Ghostbusters 3 at the moment.
Yeah,
and I think they pretty much phoned him up, or maybe even for the game, and said, "Do you want to be involved?" And he just went, "Thank you, but no, thank you. I'm retired. Actually, definitely not.
Honey, I've blown up too many kids. I'm now blowing my millions.
Exactly.
Thank you anyway." But yeah, so it is very much of its day, I think, and of its moment, and I enjoyed it to a point. But maybe then again, you see, given that you're champing 87, maybe I'm sneaking in a couple of the bad films here to show
you
how bad 1987 really was. Yeah. And, you know, bear in mind, it created Spaceballs, so there you go. Ha! That in your pipe and
there
smoke
are,
it.
There are far worse films. But no, I think it is a good point saying that 87 works for me, because I think it was probably around, it must have been the time when I was growing up enough to start watching films.
Yes.
So, and for all, because I don't remember cataloguing my film watching, but for all I know, this could have been the first year I really watched any films. Yeah. Possibly I would have been 8, and so I mean, remotely beginning, or at least a couple of years later, then seeing them on video from a few years earlier.
You stop watching Disney, you start watching this sort of thing, don't
pretty
you?
Pretty much. Yeah, this was my first starting. Well, maintaining the sci-fi angle, I'm going to go with Predator,
right?
Which is a classic.
Yeah.
But again, so you know, not classic. So, Oscar-winning screenplays.
I would just say that you stop watching Disney, you reach the age of 8, you start watching Predator.
Oh, yes. That's straight into Predator. Yeah, no segue.
Cut out the middle.
Yeah, none of your teen comedies. No, straight into hardcore blood and violence. Yeah. No, see, Predator, is a classic Arnie film.
Yeah.
Get to the chopper, among other... I won't do the accent, because that would end badly. But it's a very involving, good action, but with characters, not just mindless violence, with a nameless invisible threat. Classic quotable lines, if it bleeds, we can kill it, leaps to mind, among others. And, yeah, I just love it. And so it spawned a sequel and then two repackaged remakes.
Sort of half-sequels, yeah.
Well, yeah, Predator 2, it's all right, not quite as good. Mm. Alien vs. Predator, weak. Alien vs. Predator 2, I actually preferred to Alien vs. Predator. Yes. Yeah. I think mainly because they sort of gave the fans what they want, which was huge amounts of carnage with no real plot. And yeah, while obviously that doesn't make for great cinema, on occasion that's just what you're in the mood for watching.
See, I borrowed Predator from you a few years ago now, and sat down and thought, well, it's a classic, I've never seen it. I didn't really get it, to be honest. Didn't really do much for me, but I think it may be one of those that you probably needed to have seen earlier on. It's sort of the effects weren't good enough for me, and it just looked a bit clunky.
Oh, how dare you.
I know.
But you see, talking through this now, I am coming to realise increasingly that I think a lot of it is just my own love or for these films, and also films that if you saw them around the time, and well, as is often the case with any sort of older films, if you see them roughly at the time, then you get on board with them, you're sort of caught up in the moment, whereas if you come to them many years later, most of the concepts in them have since been redone by other people, sometimes even better, or else they're overhyped, and so you don't quite see the point. So yeah, I think you need to see them all at the time. But I think they're still worth seeing.
Maybe the subtitle for this episode could be 1987, You Had to Be There.
Well, no, that's entirely wrong. No, because they're all still great. But I can see. But also, Predator is not really your sort of film.
True.
You are not really a mindless action sort of film.
But then that's why it's worth highlighting the ones that, like Princess Bride, I think stands the test of time. Yes, you can watch it again. Spaceballs, and maybe Predator, I would say, probably not so much.
Well, yes. Although, saying you're not really an action man, as it were. Without wishing to force your hand, I see one on your list there that is very much a mindless action film.
Dirty Dancing.
Yes, that's the one.
What thought it would be.
Arnold Schwarzenegger lays waste to a small camp. No.
Were you thinking The Running Man?
I was thinking The Running Man.
Yeah, well, you mentioned the Arnie thing, because he was a busy man, though, wasn't he? He did Predator and The Running Man, and probably others as well.
Almost certainly.
He's probably had a bit part in Dirty Dancing. He's the one, he plays the watermelons that she's carrying across the dance.
What?
No one puts baby in a corner. that was an awful hit. That's why you didn't do the accent earlier, isn't it? Because you left it to me to embarrass myself.
Yes.
Thanks.
Cornish Austrian doesn't quite work.
No, I put The Running Man down because I've got a soft spot for it. I think I mentioned it weeks ago as part of our Desert Island Flicks films about TV shows. And that was my pick. I think Running Man was my favourite of those. Because, I enjoyed the film. I saw it several times growing up. And yeah, it is a sort of a mindless action film.
Oh, absolutely! But it wears it on its sleeve proudly.
It does. But also, I think I prefer that to Predator, because I think for me, Predator's a bit more of a stripped down, more of a, you know, not quite commando because it's still got sci-fi in it. But it is more of a running through forests.
Yes, it's pretty much a large group of enormous men fighting an alien, and that's it.
Exactly. Whereas The Running Man, I think it's probably a step towards that sci-fi future dystopian thing that I would ultimately find. Films like
there's more
the Brazils and the Gilliam of things that I hadn't seen at that time. So, for me, I probably found it a step towards that. So
yeah, it's more of a futuristic world and also more characterisation in there. Yeah. And as we discussed in the remakes episode, I think, as well, because it's based on a book.
Yes,
it's very, very different from the book.
Yeah.
But there's still the same sort of elements in there. Which I think probably makes for a better film, or a more involving film, anyway.
Well, I think that's why I think it's waiting for a remake, really, because I think to remake the book a bit more accurately,
yeah,
you can have a bit more fun with it, and actually have a bit more... In fact, I think it'd make a great TV series.
No,
it's a bit like 24, that sort of running from place to place, he's on the run. And Prison Break as well, very similar, sort of hiding at people's houses. And
also, you could have arcs involved, but you could kind of wrap it up at any point. If it ever got cancelled, you could pretty much have a resolution quite quickly.
Yeah.
And then you're sorted.
Well, actually, a film I saw this week, I was going to a slight tangent from 87 for a second, but I saw Logan's Run for the first time, which has elements of The Running Man and actually The Island as well, with Scarlett Hansen and Hugh McGregor, very similar to that. And I enjoyed Logan's Run to a point. You know, I thought I'd watch it because it's meant to be a classic sci-fi, very cult, and you can it's got cult written over, to be honest. It does feel like it's like The Running Man in that it's running from a studio set to a studio set quite a lot.
Yes.
And I feel it, and there are elements actually where it broke free from that, and the bits I enjoyed in Logan's Run were when they actually break out and you see an overgrown city. And I won't spoil it if you haven't seen it, but there it's a famous city. It's a bit like Planet of the Apes moment when you go, oh no, look where we are, sort of thing. And same thing in that. But the bits that I think did look a little bit hokey were the bits where they are running in this small studio set world.
Yes.
And actually, I quite like the idea of a film like the actual Running Man book, which is run to the world at large, run into apartments and houses and people like that.
Yes, with the regular people in the streets are getting a reward for turning you in and you're really on the run.
So the bits I don't really like about The Running Man are things like when they go, let's release Sub-Zero and the Gladiators element of it. And I'm there going, oh, okay, you know, we'll just watch Gladiators. We want to watch, you know, sort of...
Yeah, it's a little bit too cartoony.
Yeah, exactly. But the other elements I do like, so that's why I said that one.
Maintaining partly remakes reference and also the sci-fi is RoboCop.
Oh yes,
which is it tends to be my definitive 87 film. I think just because, again, I love it, and it was one of the first, probably the first 18 rated video I ever saw. Which I saw at a very young age, and also suitable for remake. But it's the classic sort of man machine. A cop gets killed by a gang, gets turned into a robot. I say classic, so it's just Jane Austen could have written it. Gets turned into a half man, half robot. And then memories reawaken, and he goes after this gang while also being chased down by the people who created him. But it's like The Running Man, it's a good mix of partly a lot of action, but also there's human interest there. And you see a very, very well played by Peter Weller, because he nicely combines the machine part of him and being very robotic about his movements. But also you can see the degree of anguish that kicks in when he's wandering around his old family home and the memories coming in of his wife and child and how he's now lost them. Which all gets revisited a bit in the second one as well, and then they just murder it all for the third one. And it's never too... I mean, it's very 80s-ish, as is often the way with futuristic films made in the 80s. The version of the future is essentially the 80s, but with slightly different cars, which is pretty much it. Yeah. See, this is something else that I don't know if I may have mentioned before, which is when sci-fi films started getting the future more accurate. Because in any 80s, or even early 90s film, any futuristic version is always pretty much the 80s, but with slightly different outfits.
Yes.
Or different haircuts.
Yeah, yeah.
There's no real... there's obviously fictional technology advancements, but nothing really extrapolated from then, because there wasn't that much... There was no sort of internet, wireless communication, not so much.
Yeah.
And then you get the flurry of mid-90s internet-based, slightly futuristic films. And also Strange Days and things like that.
Yeah, yeah.
And now you get Minority Report. And I think now there's a direction appearing. So you can sort of see, okay, well, the technology we've got now, in 10 years, we'll be able to do this.
They're getting it roughly right, aren't they? Yes.
So there must have been
the difference is, I'm guessing now they're actually probably consulting with a lot of technology firms saying, look, what are you developing now that will...
Yeah,
we'll
I know they did that
time,
in
you know?
Minority Report.
Yeah.
They actually did have proper futurologists on board and saying,
why not? Because actually, to go back again to Logan's Run, what I found, because I think that's a 70s film, I'm guessing.
I think 76.
Could be, oh, there you go. And their vision of the future is, again, quite laughable, but it's interesting to look at from a historical perspective in a way, because you can see the 70s version of the future is lots of free love.
Right,
it almost feels 60s, actually, in a way, because lots of, you know, the future for them is this massive dome where everyone's having sex with everyone else, really.
So sort of post the sexual revolution, but pre-AIDS.
Exactly, it is. It is, actually. It's odd. And yeah, as a result, it's Michael York is the main lead in it, and Jenny Agutter is woman who joins him with.
Who is, of course, naked at some
point. She does love to be naked. She spends most of the film either naked or very nearly naked, and Michael York spends most of the film trying to get her even more naked.
Right. More naked than naked. Is
more naked
take her
than
skin
when
off?
She's not quite naked. But also their version of the future, it's mostly, I read up, it's actually filmed largely in a shopping centre, I think Denver, I think it was.
Right.
It was one of these big shopping malls, but one of the early ones. So at the time it was quite a futuristic idea to have a shopping mall. Wow. Yeah. And so it's quite, you've got all these people in bizarre futuristic, because it's set in like 23 something or other.
Okay.
2274 I think it is. So quite a way into the future, a good couple hundred years. But you see people with these bizarre outfits, and you go, fair enough, that could be futuristic, a bit quite Star Trek-y, that sort of thing. And they just walk along in the shopping centre, but which could be a big future space station, fair enough. And then get on an escalator. And at the time, obviously, escalators were like, wow, that's not many of those around.
What do you say there? But the first escalator was developed, it was wooden. And like
it was quite
1800s
old,
or the 20s.
But
or
the idea, the thing they hadn't seen past the escalator.
Yeah.
And also then at some point, someone picks up a phone in a security office. And I think it hasn't got a cord on it, actually, so fair play. They did think ahead to cordless phones, but it's huge. It's just massive. It's like bigger than Wall Street phones. It's the size of a head.
Yeah, and I think maybe it was just that they, because obviously the design department could have knocked up something cardboard and tiny.
Yeah.
But they may just have thought no one will know, no one will understand that this is a phone.
No,
because,
of course, yeah, maybe
we must make it big, otherwise
won't see
what?
It. Yeah. But there's nothing that goes in your ear, because no, they didn't really have any of that at all. Even headphones. They didn't even have earphones at the time, of course. It was headphones.
Yeah.
So it is surprisingly hokey, the bits they get
wrong.
Yeah,
it's a limited vision of the future.
Yeah.
But yeah, sorry, we digress.
Sorry, yes.
But it sort of ties into Robocop. Yes, and Robocop is coming up for a remake. Rumours of next year and Darren Aronofsky directing it, although that may now be a bit wobbly. Not heard anything for all. And that could be very, very good. Provided, but again, because it's the human interest angle that makes it a good film. If you which is why having Darren Aronofsky or a worthwhile director attached, rather than Uwe Boll or someone similar.
Who?
Uwe Boll or UWE Boll.
Okay, never heard of him.
No, fair enough. Look him up. He's made the worst films you
really?
Will ever see in your
Uwe
entire...
Boll.
Yeah.
Okay.
He's famous for having no sense of self-awareness.
Oh, dear.
And... yeah, he just makes dross.
Really?
He really does. Oh. Anyway, yes, but so
let's not have him behind the camera.
No, definitely not. So if you make Robocop with modern effects, but you know, and a modern vision of the future, if that makes sense. But also keep the human angle rather than just mindless action.
Yes.
Then it could, because that's what Robocop 2 is lacking. Robocop 2 sort of has more action and less human interest. And as such, it's still quite good, but it doesn't quite
Yeah, fair enough.
So, yeah, but Robocop I love.
Certainly, the Academy Awards for 1987, best film was The Last Emperor by Bernardo Bertolucci. I've never seen that one, actually.
No, nor have I. Was that Christian Bale's first film? Emperor of the Rising Sun, was that Steven Spielberg?
Yeah, Emperor of the Sun was.
Emperor of the Sun.
And then The Rising Sun was the Sean Connery Crichton film, yeah.
Christian Bale was either in Empire of the Sun or The Last Emperor.
Yeah, I always get the two confused.
Yes.
Yeah.
His debut was in one of them.
Haven't seen either.
No,
for so really ought to. Best director, Bernardo Bertolucci for Last Emperor. Best actor was Michael Douglas for Wall Street.
Ah, yes.
I loved her in Wall Street.
Yeah.
Best actress was Cher for Moonstruck. Best supporting actress was Olympia Dukakis for Moonstruck. And best supporting actor was Sean Connery for The Untouchables.
Which we will come to shortly.
Which we'll come to, indeed.
Yeah. Yes. But not Moonstruck. I don't think I've ever actually seen Moonstruck.
Oh, I've never seen Moonstruck either.
I think
wasn't that moonstruck by it?
No, Cher. Well, actually, I was going to say that Cher's acting never really did much for me, but there's a film that you have which mentions.
Well, Witches of Eastwick.
Yes.
Which is, of course, Cher, Michelle Pfeiffer,
and
the
Susan
other one.
Sarandon.
Susan Sarandon. And, of course, Jack Nicholson.
Who makes the film. Mighty Nicholson.
And that's why I put it down there, because Jack Nicholson alone makes that film. He is the devil. He's brilliant
it
at
is,
that.
Yes, it is a sort of cliche to say the role he was born to play, but he does do it so very, very
it's
well.
It's excellent. And put it this way, there's a musical version of Witches of Eastwick, which was generally panned. It's actually touring the country as we speak.
Oh, really?
With Marty Pello.
From
Wet, Wet, Wet.
Oh, because it was Ian McShane for a while, wasn't it?
Well, it was years ago. This is the new version.
Oh, I see.
And it was in the West End with Ian McShane, lasted about 6 months, generally awful, and they're bringing it back now with Marty Pello. The interesting thing about that was that apparently Marty Pello banged his head on while rehearsing and was really over-dramatising it, saying, "Oh, I can't feel my head." And then one of the stagehands said, "Can you feel it in your fingers? Can you feel it in your toes?" And that didn't go down too well, apparently. But no, the musical, I've sort of got the CD of the musical, actually, the stage show, And it's all right. I think it's actually not bad. Okay. But I reckon part of the reason it flopped was because the film was so good. I think you compare it with the film, and for a start, can you really see Marty Pello from Wet, Wet, Wet versus Jack Nicholson? Yeah. I know who's going to win, really. Yes. So I haven't seen it for a long time, actually, that film, but I certainly did enjoy it. I think I felt bad growing up watching it because it seemed like more of a woman's film watching it throughout because it had lots of women in it.
A little bit, because you've got thinking, three female protagonists.
I'm not sure, but then you get all the devilish bits and you think, oh no, it's actually, you know, it's fine for us boys to watch it.
Well, yes. I mean, it's not quite horror-y, but it does have its moments. Yeah.
It has got elements. But I thought that's an excellent, fine movie and a proof that, you know, some of these stars we're talking about sort of come and go a bit, like, you know, your Cary Elwes and Rick Moranis and these other people of the 80s.
Yeah.
But Jack Nicholson was there then, he was there 10 years before then, and he's still there now, so fair play to him.
Yes, very true. And also got Michelle Pfeiffer, who were vaguely tying together, because Michelle Pfeiffer was in Witches of Eastwick, but was also in Stardust,
exactly,
which is the modern
like
Princess
Bride. So
it
all links back somehow, if you really want it to. Yes,
just about. Yeah. So, you know, I have a couple there. I'm going to go with The Untouchables.
Yeah, I mentioned that one.
Being an Oscar winner.
Mm.
And yeah, because that was on TV not too long ago, and it's a great combination of brilliant acting. Kevin Costner, pretty much at his peak, or sort of around that time before he became. I don't want to say a joke because it just seems harsh, but he does seem to have had a weird tail off.
I think he's sort of. He seemed like he was having a bit of a resurgence in the last year or so with films like Mr. Brooks.
Yes.
And what's that one about?
There's the voting one as well.
Votes.
Yes.
But he doesn't seem
to
be.
Yeah, but he seems to have had a couple of those.
Hugely.
It's just, I think he seems to have had one too many personal projects, like Waterworld and The Postman.
Yeah, he went a bit carried away, I think, on those ones.
Yeah.
I saw The Postman not too long ago, actually, and actually quite enjoyed it.
Yeah. It was like Waterworld.
You watch it back now, it's not so bad. It's just you compare it at the time. After Dances with Wolves and Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves, you're expecting another one of those, and I think neither one delivered.
I think expectations are criminal in the film world because they can make or break things.
Maybe
unjustifiably
the thing
so.
The thing is, maybe because I think those four films are the big ones. It seems for him, Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves, Dance with Wolves, Waterworld, The Postman, and the two historical ones worked. The two futuristic ones didn't.
Yeah.
So maybe that's his lesson he should learn from that. Do the historical stuff and don't look to the future.
But then, of course, and also, of course, JFK, historical, that
very
works.
Very true, yeah.
Bodyguard was, I suppose, that sort of modern, current, current era.
Yeah, yeah. Field of Dreams had bits in the past, and that worked very
well. Yeah, very true.
Yeah.
So he's someone who can carry a film. Yeah, so this was before his big wave of personal stuff, on his ascendance. And I think it's great. It's a great music, great him.
Yeah.
Sean Connery's brilliant. So historical, fairly accurate, I think, story. Yeah. And just very involving on every level.
Yeah. I've only seen it, I think, once, actually, maybe once or twice. But no, great. And really good cast, Sean Connery and Robert De Niro. And really good.
Of course, Robert De Niro,
Yeah, really good.
Who, again, is someone who got, I think, paid an enormous amount of money for not very much screen time.
No, he didn't do much.
But he does fit the role perfectly.
Very good. Yeah. I'll do a quick token mention to Dirty Dancing, I think. I have to mention it. It's not a favourite of mine because I'm male.
If Jen was here, she'd kill us for not mentioning it.
By so many that it's worth a mention. It's a big thing from 1987. You know, it's got everything. It's got quotable lines, dancing. Doesn't have guns or action or violence, so it doesn't have everything.
It doesn't have everything.
But it stood the test of time. People still watch it and people still love it.
It is still very much women around the country. Well, it sounds slightly sexist, but it is true. It's not like a rom-com, which could work either. Dirty Dancing is pretty much a girly film. But women around the country will regularly dig it out if they're in a girly mood.
And other films I'd love to talk about, haven't got real time to do it. With Nail and I, Full Metal Jacket...
Wall Street, of course.
Of course, Mannequin, Staker, Inner Space.
Staker, Inner Space, you see. The Rick Moranis once again.
Wonderful.
Dragnet, Overboard, Goldie Hawn, classic. Three Men and a Baby, of course.
Oh, yeah, Fatal Attraction, The Lost Boys, Good Morning Vietnam.
Hellraiser is sort of a 80s...
There's a bunch there. So all that remains, Desert Island Flicks. Pick your favourite of the ones we mentioned so far.
I think it's got to be RoboCop. I'm not going to claim that it's the greatest film ever made, but it strikes a chord with me.
Yeah.
And it's the combination of sci-fi, action, futuristic, sort of alienated character, just quite interesting.
Yeah.
And I've always loved it and always will love it.
Fair enough. I'm actually going to go with The Princess Bride, one from your list,
I forgot about that.
So I'm going to pick The Princess Bride as my favourite because it's a fine movie and you can watch it again and again and again and again. And I will watch it again.
Excellent.
And again,
please
and again.
Do.
So, over to you, listening public. That's 87. You've heard 84 before as well. So, who do you think wins? We want to, you know.
Yeah, very true. Yeah, 84, 87. If you had to pick a year, you could only watch the films from that year.
One of those. Do let us know what you think.
Which would you go for?
And thank you for listening. Till next time. Thank you for tuning in.
Thank you very much.
We'll see you when on.
Bye-bye.